What we did last week is we gave a whole lot of background information on Samaritans, what's going on here between a Jew and a Samaritan talking, a man and a woman meeting in this context, her cultural background, why she's showing up in the middle of the day rather than at the early part of the day, whole culture of shame, the idea that she's at the margins not only of the world that Jesus inhabits, but she's at the margins of her own world, and how this is related to the mission that Jesus is conducting for the whole world. There's a tremendous contrast that's going on here, a compare and contrast between the person he's just had the interview with, Nicodemus, who's a Pharisee chief theologian, right? Sort of the head of the religious establishment, holiest of all, and now this woman who's an outcast even of the Samaritans, she's so immoral, right? And Jesus is stopping to talk to both, and they both are in need of saving, right? So two people at rather opposite ends of the social spectrum, one very powerful, one at the center of things, the whole Jerusalem establishment, one at the very furthest other end of the margins of society. And Jesus is saving both of them. And so that's one of the things that's happening here, is the extent of mission. So one of the things we noted, of course, was there's these icons that are that show this encounter between Jesus and the woman, who's in church history referred to as Photina, the woman who has wisdom. And so Saint Photina, if you ever see her referred to. And in these idealized, iconic versions of the encounter, I mentioned last week, we showed it last week, in one of those, there was a kind of cross shape to the well. Right, but this one this week I brought for everybody shows it really quite explicitly when they draw these or write these is the correct term for the creation of icons. Writing an icon, they have often made the cross very explicit here as the shape of the well, because what is happening here is centered in the work of Jesus at the cross, and that tie-in is most especially noted in his words to the woman that initiate the whole conversation, which are, give me something to drink. It says that he's thirsty. And of course, later in John's gospel, we'll hear Jesus say, I thirst. And he says this from the cross, right? So there's this interesting comparison that's going on here. So theologians have always tied the dialogue that's taking place here with the work of Jesus on the cross, his thirst on the cross, his labor, his journey to the cross and through death and resurrection to saving the world, his world mission, which now goes out to the Samaritans. So if we pick it up here, we did the background stuff, and if we pick it up here in verse 7 in John chapter 4, there came a woman of Samaria to draw water, and Jesus said to her, give me a drink. For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food, and therefore the Samaritan woman said to him, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask me for a drink, since I am a Samaritan woman? For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. And Jesus answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of God, and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. She said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? You are not greater than our father Jacob, are you, who gave us the well and drank of it himself and his sons and his cattle? Jesus answered and said to her, everyone who drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him shall never thirst. The water that I will give him will become in him a well of water, springing up to eternal life. So I titled this little section, The Gift and the Giver. We'll get through as much of chapter 4 as we can, but I wanted to notice a couple of things. First of all, let's just think about water as something which is being heavily employed by John here in the gospel. Water dominates the first part of John's gospel. And it will, of course, have a tie-in at the end on the cross as well. Because what is it, of course, that when the soldier pierces his side, we see? Blood and water are united together. But in the early parts of John's gospel, water is constantly in view. Water is turned to wine in chapter 2. In chapter 3, a person must be born of water and spirit. In chapter 1, John is baptizing people in water, and Jesus goes to be baptized himself. Here in chapter 4, we have the water at the well. In chapter 5, we have a man healed at the pool of Bethesda. He's trying to get into the water, and Jesus heals him up there at that place. In chapter 6, Jesus walks on the water. In chapter 7, they have the temple ritual about the Feast of Tabernacles, where they're walking around the altar, and they have these great gold pitchers, actually, in this ceremony that was going on in the temple, and they're going to pour water around the altar. Jesus, at the time when they're about to pour this water, which is a symbol of God's provision for them in the wilderness, when they were going through the wilderness and living in tents, in tabernacles, before they'd settled and they needed water in the wilderness, Jesus says in the middle of that ceremony, "If you're thirsty, come to me." Right? That's where he says those words. So water's a very dominant issue here, a very dominant symbol. But think about it. Think about that symbol in terms of that society. We know that water is important to us. We want to bathe. We want to have a drink. But let's take ourselves back a little bit. We find our access to water really relatively easy, right? But think about the heat and the physical surroundings of this culture where this occurs, right? What do you have?
Right? Tough situation.
It's very tough. And how accessible is water? Well,
not very.
Not very. In fact, how many rivers are flowing through Jerusalem?
None.
None.
Except for the one that Hezekiah dug out.
It's all down here. It's under the surface, you know, so you have to get